Welcome to Let's Learn Together, a podcast from the East Greenbush Central School District. I'm your host, Superintendent Jeff Simons. One of the most important parts of the school day for our students is lunchtime. Yes, it's where they replenish their energy by eating a healthy meal, but it's also a time when students can take a break from their academics, the pressures of class, and socialize with their friends and classmates. On today's episode, I will sit down with food service manager Colleen Wise, who runs our lunch program, to discuss our food services program, how she develops breakfast and lunch menus, what goes into it, and her efforts to continue to offer free meals to as many students in our district as possible. We'll also talk about the importance of having friendly kitchen staff and how Goff Middle School students are taking care of the environment by implementing a composting program that has been led by students during the last year. A little later on, our students will offer some suggestions for new menu items in the cafeteria. Also, very important, we recognize School Library Month. Our school librarians share book recommendations for our students. And we will feature Goff Middle School intramurals in the Student Activity Spotlight. But first, let me take a moment to talk about our proposed capital project. The community may be learning about a project that we propose that will be a separate ballot proposition from our normal annual budget. The vote will be on May 21st. It's important for the community to take a really close look at the project and all of the benefits that will occur for students from pre-K all the way up to our graduating seniors. The project includes enhancements to our classrooms, our library media spaces, improvements to our athletic fields, and improvements to the school climate through the installation of new heating and ventilation systems, which will include air conditioning for the elementary schools. The project, while $116 million, is funded through a bonding program over a 15 to 20 year period in which the state will reimburse our district approximately 72% of the project's eligible costs for state reimbursement. Additionally, the community approved a capital reserve 2 years ago, and our board has funded that reserve in the amount of approximately $2 million. We will use that reserve to be able to offer this $116 million capital plan to improve our schools at zero additional cost to our taxpayers. Please take a close look at the project, and if you have any questions, please contact me at the district office. We'll be talking about a community forum a little bit later on in our podcast. Now, let's learn together. We're privileged to talk with Colleen Wise, who is our school lunch manager. School nutrition is important to all of our students to make sure that not only they are learning, but they are growing and eating a healthy meal every day. Welcome, Colleen.
Thank you for having me.
So one of the things that we may not often think about is the size of the school lunch program. We have seven schools in our district. We have a number of students that have breakfast and lunch at school. Can you give us a sense of the scale of your operation here in East Greenbush in terms of providing lunch and breakfast to our students across seven schools?
Sure. Yes, the scale is definitely large when you think about our seven schools. In addition to that, we also are providing meals to some of our pre-K programs and additional students at Holy Spirit School, and also provide meals to students at Sackett. So, and we're really looking at a large amount of buildings that we are providing meals to. We serve over 2,000 lunches every day. We serve several hundred breakfasts across our buildings every day. So it's a large amount of work as a whole, and the kitchens are extremely busy at each individual school as well.
When you think about planning the monthly menu for students, elementary, middle school, and high school, what kind of factors do you consider in terms of A, what's on the menu, but B, what students might like and enjoy eating in terms of the different levels of grade levels that we have?
There's a lot of things that I take into consideration. First and foremost, we we run federally funded programs. So we have several nutritional parameters that we really have to stick to. We have some sophisticated meal planning software that helps us make sure that we're meeting the proper amount of calories, saturated fat, and sodium. So we really have to take a look at those, make sure we're meeting those guidelines first, and then kind of dive into how each meal service is set up. So in the elementary schools, it's a very quick grab and go breakfast. So what kind of foods do the kids like that work well, that they can eat in the classroom, that they can transport? The high school is a little bit different. They have a little bit more time to grab maybe some hot items, some, you know, breakfast sandwiches, something a little heartier for the bigger students. So there's a lot that goes into it. Of course, we want to make sure the food is getting into the students' stomachs before they start the day. So, of course, we want them to enjoy the food. We have to look at costs. I'm sure anyone who's been to the grocery store lately has noticed the rise in the cost of food. So we have to take that into consideration, too. So I think, you know, first and foremost, we want to make sure we're meeting the nutritional standards as set forth by the USDA. And secondly, really try to find what the kids like, and that's at a good price point for our program as well.
What are the most popular lunches, for example, at the elementary school level, where you see more kids ordering hot lunch for their lunch meal?
I think breakfast for lunch is always one of the most popular days. We kind of try to switch it up with some mini pancakes. We can get a few different kinds, some maple, some confetti to keep it fun for the kids. We do French toast sticks. We always try to pair that with, you know, like a protein for the students. So either turkey sausage links or a yogurt. Those are really popular items. Chicken, we have traditionally always done chicken in the district on Thursdays. That's always a popular day. We try to make it interesting, kind of add a spin on some of the chicken items. We do kind of a play on chicken and waffles, hot honey chicken sandwiches, and then pizza, of course. I think it is a very popular day on Fridays.
So when the kids get older and they move through middle school into high school, there's a little more choice for the kids, and there's a little different format for students to be able to order and receive their lunch. Can you talk about some of the options, for example, that are available at Columbia High School?
Sure. At Columbia High School, we are really set up like a food court. So you walk into the cafeteria, and we have our hot lines. So those are going to be the traditional items that you'd see on our elementary and middle school menus too. But we have a little more room to add items onto that. For example, walking tacos, or, you know, things that take a little bit more work putting the items together, just because we have that flexibility. Next you'll move over, we have fresh salads and sandwiches that are prepared every day. They're really visually appealing. They're very tasty, fresh, you know, fresh items. We try to do some grab and go meals. So we do, you know, a bundle with a peanut butter and jelly and everything kind of for grab and go for the kids. And then I think our most popular station is our wrap station. So we have a wrap station. You can customize your wrap. Every day we slice fresh deli meat, cheeses, a variety of vegetables, toppings to put on it. So that is, I would say, the most popular meal at Columbia. And then moving on, our final station is a pizza station. So the students have really a wide variety at Columbia, and we're always trying to take the students' input, you know, hearing about the need for vegetarian items or gluten-free items. So trying to put together different items where kids have those meals accessible to them every day.
Thank you, Colleen. I have to say that this is the first podcast we've done this year where I'm getting hungrier by the second. As you described the menu options that are available to our kids. One of my memories from my own education, and I was at elementary school in the 1970s, I do remember my lunch lady that served us, and I remember her by name, and have good fond memory. What do you look for when we hire people that are going to be interacting with the kids and serving lunch? What are some of the characteristics and what you're hoping to achieve, and who's actually serving the lunch or the breakfast in that case to our kids?
Really, we look for someone who is friendly and approachable, really someone who's going to have that smile on their face when the students come up to the lunch line. You know, I always say that we're privileged to to serve these kids and see these kids at one of the happiest parts of their day. Everyone loves going to lunch. And so we're seeing them at a really great time. So just greeting them, you know, and maybe they have had a bad day and their lunch lady is someone where they can kind of, you know, talk about anything going on. So we see these kids every day. We get to know them. So we really want someone who is, you know, takes an interest in them and gets to know them and is just friendly and you know, personable. And, you know, we're looking for someone who's a team player. You know, the kitchens can be challenging to work in. It's very fast paced. So just really someone who enjoys working with the students and enjoys being a part of their day.
When I visit the cafeterias, particularly as I watch kids go through the serving line, I do see a lot of smiling faces. And I think our people that work in the school lunch program do a terrific job, not only at preparing the meals, but it's really about connecting with the kids. And I know in many cases, the kids do look forward, not only to having lunch in that downtime, but seeing the people that serve them the meals every day. So we want to give a shout out to all the people that work with you, Colleen, to provide nutritious meals for the kids.
Thank you.
I'm thinking a little.
Go
ahead.
I was going to say we really do love our jobs in the food service department.
So on that subject, one of the things that we are doing in the school district is we have conversations with kids younger than what you might expect regarding career paths that they might pursue. What prompted you to get interested in the whole area of food service, meal preparation on a large scale? And tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to where you're at right now, overseeing the operation of a school lunch program for a district of 4,000 kids.
Sure. I would say a long career in food service. I actually started working in a pizza shop when I was going to college and kind of fell in love with the food service industry and decided to change career paths. So I spent many, many years cooking and catering, you know, catering high-end weddings, all sorts of different things. When I really ended up in food service, I was able to get a job in the school nutrition program, in the child nutrition office in the state education department. They oversee the school lunch and school breakfast programs. And I worked there for about 4 years. I would conduct administrative reviews, give technical assistance to school districts throughout New York State. So I traveled around through school districts in New York State. And the more time that I spent in those schools, the more I realized I was on the wrong side of things. I saw how the school lunch directors would interact with the students. I saw just what an important part of their day they were. And when an opportunity came available locally for me to make that change over from the administrative part in the New York State Education Department to actually running a school lunch program, I jumped on it. And I really, truly love what I do. I do feel like I am making a difference and making an impact on students. And I actually live in this district and my students go to school here. So when I say I feel like I'm feeding my own kids, I really am. I'm feeding literally my own kids and their friends and their, you know, their classmates. So it's something that I take very seriously.
So there are a lot of students out there that I'm certain have a passion for food. I do know some students that like to cook, like to prepare meals, and maybe this is a career that they might consider moving into. The opportunities that are provided for kids in the school district through the lunch program, the school lunch program, are tremendous in terms of nutritional support, but also the opportunities for them to interact with their peers during lunch. What are some ways that we have, over the years that you have been here, tried to expand the affordability of the school lunch program to keep the costs under control for our families? Going back to the years when we were impacted by COVID-19 and operating our schools in a pandemic, Congress approved the provisions to provide funding to the states to ensure that during that period of time, all of the students were eligible for free lunch and free breakfast. That changed a couple of years ago as we came through the pandemic. The state stepped up and provided some changes to the regulations as well as additional money. Can you talk a little bit about where our district is at in terms of eligibility for all of the school buildings and all of the kids in our district to receive free meals?
Sure. So like you said, you know, we are coming off of a few years where meals were provided for free. A few interesting things happened in the past year. New York State invested a huge amount of money to expand school meals throughout New York State by kind of subsidizing the Community Eligibility Program, which is a federal program that allows districts to offer free breakfast lunch to our students. While that happened, the USDA also changed the threshold from 40% to 25%, which is the number of identified students in the district that need to qualify through free meals through either SNAP or Medicaid or a few other, through other ways. And what that, the position that put our district in was that we were only able to qualify four of our buildings. So the update really is that we are advocating, we've been advocating all year to our legislators, our assemblymen, and we've had a good response. We went down to the legislator during the Legislative Action Conference with the School Nutrition Association. And, you know, they did know about our situation, that we were not able to offer meals to every student in our district. And they do realize that they didn't go far enough last year. So we're hopeful. We haven't seen what the New York State budget will include this year, but we were really asking them to close that gap. And what they did last year was great, but there's still about 320,000 students in New York State that aren't receiving free meals, and that includes students right here in East Greenbush. So we're constantly reviewing our data, seeing if we can get those numbers to work on that community eligibility application, and we're really hoping we see New York State step up this year to feed our students.
So every effort is being made by your department to make sure that we can file the necessary documentation and applications to provide, where we can, free meals to the kids based on the eligibility standards that are in place at this point. And your department has made a concerted effort to try to do whatever we can to make sure that the meals that are provided to the kids, if not free, are as affordable as possible.
Absolutely. We are. We have tried not to, you know, coming off of those COVID years, we tried not to increase our prices. We knew, you know, families would be struggling with paying for meals. And you know, we did another thing this year that's increased, I do believe, increased the amount of students eligible. We went to an online application for free and reduced meals, and we've seen a huge increase in the amount of families that have applied for free and reduced meals. And sometimes it's hard to turn that paper in or send that paper into school. There's kind of a stigma attached to free meals, which is why we are pushing for universal free meals. But we saw a huge increase of maybe families were just more comfortable applying online. So, you know, we are doing everything we can, having those conversations with families, encouraging them to apply mid-year if their circumstances change. So we do talk to people on a regular basis and make sure they're receiving all the support they can from our department.
So when I was growing up, I can remember my grandmother several times saying to me that it was a sin to waste food. And that has been ingrained in me. And I know that our kids nowadays are a little more conscientious about the environment. They're more in tune to ways that, for example, we can recycle. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, our students brought forward a program regarding the food waste and potential to reuse that and for composting. Can you talk a little bit about that program that we have, how it was developed and where we're at in terms of engaging our kids and being A, more conscientious about not wasting food, but B, finding ways that we can be more conscientious about how food waste might be able to be utilized in other ways other than simply throwing everything in the trash can?
Sure. So I really think, you know, it starts with educating our students about what a complete tray looks like. So making sure they're taking as much as they want, making sure that, you know, they know what the minimum requirements are, so they're not taking too much food. We started composting last year at Goff Middle School. It's been hugely successful. What we did last year is we got our Defenders of Mother Earth Club and the Gardening Club at Goff. We got them involved. They made an amazing video that was shown to all the students at Goff. And they kind of, when we first started, they manned the composting bins. They were really holding their fellow students accountable, and they were explaining to them why we compost, what goes in the compost bin. So I think having that buy-in from the students and really making them feel like part of the composting program was a huge success. We work with Food Scraps 360. They come every other week and they pick up our waste. And speaking with the owner, she's been really impressed with how the students have done. When we first started, she'd have to go through the bins and make sure there wasn't any plastic in there, or there wasn't a fork in there, or something that couldn't be in there. And she doesn't have to do that anymore. And she hasn't had to do that probably for about a year now. She can just come. She knows that the food is sorted properly, and she's able to bring it and compost it. So we're actually, I think, only a couple of schools in the Capital Region do this. So we're really happy with how our students have done with it. And, you know, I think it's harder at the high school level, but my idea is that next year, half of the high school will be students that have already composted. So we're going to try to next year really, you know, 50% of our student body is used to this. We're going to try to carry that momentum. So it's kind of baby steps we're taking, right. But it's been really successful here at the middle school.
So the students are holding each other accountable and kind of setting the expectations. And as they progress from middle school to high school, we should see the number of kids involved in composting and a level of conscientiousness raised among the high school kids because of what was started in the middle school. So I think that's a terrific, again, that came from students, but with your support, Colleen, and the support of our schools. And I think it's turned into a great venture for our kids as a learning activity and making a difference. So what are some ways that the school lunch program gets involved in some of the monthly themes or things that go on in schools, for example, holidays, special times of the year, seasonal changes? What are some things that you do in the school lunch program to kind of keep the interest high and connect to some of the themes and things that are going on in the school?
Sure. We definitely try to take a look at our menus, make sure they are seasonally appropriate. Of course, you know, living in New York State, apples are plentiful. So we always take part in the Big Apple Crunch in the fall. We really try to take part of Farm to School Month, which is also in October. And our, you know, I think something that goes a long way with our students is every kitchen of ours really takes a lot of pride in how their serving line looks. So the decorations are always really welcoming. They're very seasonal, so they take a lot of pride in decorating, even, you know, participating in certain days that are going on in the schools, wearing, you know, taking part of you know, the dress up days and being able to see your lunch staff, you know, right in their pajamas or in their holiday sweaters or something like that is really fun for the kids. So we always try to, you know, be part, kind of tie in what's going on in the school to the lunchroom.
Very good. Now, you mentioned farm to table. There are a lot of initiatives at the federal, state, and local level to promote farm to table. Mm-hmm. Also to utilize locally grown products. Sometimes that can be a little challenging to initiate with some of the regulations. How do we as a school district try to promote locally grown produce, for example, or products? And where do we stand in terms of some of the statewide programs that are now available to schools?
Sure. So we actually applied for and received a grant last year. We received a grant called the Local Food for School Grant. And what that grant is allowing us to do is purchase directly from farmers. So when we had our big apple crunch this year, I called up Windy Hill Orchard right down the road, and we purchased our apples from them. We work with Comfort Food Community. They are a food hub. They're actually in Greenwich, but they're here weekly. They're delivering our apples that are coming from Samaspa. So they're delivering local New York State made pasta and ravioli that we're trying out at the high school. We are trying local beef burgers. So we're kind of testing these things out this year, seeing how they're going. You know, the methods for cooking them are different. It's kind of a learning curve, but we're really able to take these grant funds and experiment with local food. So, you know, we serve New York State milk every day. You know, the apples that you see on the lunch line are most likely from a local orchard. You know, we're able to get in local produce and you know, our granola that we serve with our yogurt parfaits is local. It's a New York State product. So we're really trying to support farmers. And there's a huge initiative right now for farm to school. It's really making sure we have the proper equipment, the proper training. So it's kind of in its beginning stages right now of going from more than just apples every day to really seeing like our center of plate, the plate items being a New York State food item. So
very good.
Exciting time for farm to school.
So you provided us today with a lot of information regarding the school lunch program, and the focus is really on student health, student wellness, and happy kids. I want you to just think for a minute. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, Colleen. In all of your years in working with the school lunch program, I want you to think of a memory or a story where you walked home, came home from work that day and said, wow, our program does really make a difference for kids.
Well, I can think of one right off the top of my head. And I was at a school last year on the very first day of school, and I might tear up saying this, but
it's okay.
A student came right up and he gave me a huge hug. And, you know, I think it was a student who might not have had a lot to eat over the summer. And I'll never forget the excitement on his face when he came up and saw us with breakfast ready. He was so happy to see us and get a meal. And, you know, it's a student that I know eats breakfast and lunch every day at school. And he just, it was very touching. And I'll never forget that.
I want to thank Colleen Wise for helping us all understand the importance of our school lunch program and what we do to provide love and meals for the kids. Thank you, Mrs. Wise, for contributing to our podcast today and for the difference that you and everyone that works in the school lunch program is making every day for our children. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And now we hear from our students who offer some suggestions for new menu items in our school lunch program.
Hi, my name is Luca. I'm in fourth grade and I go to Belltop School. I think for lunch we should have medium rare gourmet steak.
Hi, my name is Maribel and I'm in fourth grade and I go to Belltop Elementary School. And I think for lunch we should have raviolis.
Hey, my name is Catalina. I'm an eighth grader at Goff Middle School. And I would love to have like an all-you-can-eat buffet, so like you can pick out what you can eat for like lunch and everything. And like it would just be so fun because like you have so many selections to pick from. So like I feel like that would be so fun.
Hi, I'm Michael. I'm a senior at Columbia. Personally, I don't think that we should do the personal pan pizza anymore. I think they should switch it out with more options with the round pizza instead, with like pepperoni, different styles of cheese, and maybe more toppings.
My name is Isabella and I am fourth grade. I go to Belltop Elementary School. And I think we should have California rolls for lunch.
Hi, my name is Luke. I'm an eighth grader at Goff Middle School. And I think we should have more breakfast items like a waffle iron and bacon and like turkey bacon and all type of stuff.
My name is Isabella Bott and I'm in fourth grade and in Belltop Elementary School. I think we should have sushi for lunch.
Hello, my name is Andrew Gabriel and I'm a senior this year at Columbia High School. And my personal food suggestion would be more like make your own things. Like we have a wrap bar where we can like make our own wraps. However, I would like to expand on that idea. Maybe a taco bar, a burrito bar would be outstanding. Maybe build your own pizza day, build your own sandwich. Really, you could build anything. I don't know. We could have a section where we could make the food. I don't know, something fun like that. That would be my idea.
In recognition of School Library Month, three of our school librarians, Kate Banks, Jamie Tobin, and Liz Griffin, share book recommendations for students.
Hi, I'm Liz Griffin, and I'm the librarian at Red Mill Elementary School, and I'm here to give some reading recommendations. I've made this a little bit trickier for myself because I wanted to give three different kinds of recommendations. I have a picture book recommendation, graphic novel, and of course, a chapter book. My picture book recommendation has got to be Buffalo Fluffalo, written by Bess Kalb and illustrated by Aaron Cron. This is the story of a silly buffalo who tries to bluff and puff his way into seeming bigger than he is. He boasts and brags and has enough of all the other animals trying to be his friend, but when he needs them most, they show up for him again. I love this story because of the rhyming text. It makes it fun and engaging for readers and listeners, but the message about being enough just the way you are is so sweet and timely. My graphic novel recommendation has to be Animorphs. This is a series where five kids suddenly obtain the ability to transform into any animal they touch and now have to use that power to protect their planet. The original chapter books were written by Catherine Applegate and Michael Grant under the pen name K.A. Applegate, and they're being adapted into graphic novels by Chris Grine. The series is amazing and it has a little bit of everything, science fiction, scary fiction, and an absolutely wild adventure to follow. I love that the stories I enjoyed as a kid are reaching a whole new audience with my students thanks to these amazing new illustrations. As for chapter books, I am borrowing a recommendation from one of my students. Simon B. Ryman is the story of Simon Barnes, a fifth grader from Chicago who has dreams of becoming a famous rapper, but tends to keep his head down at school. When his teacher gives the class a new assignment, Simon must face his fears and maybe even bring his community together in a new way. The story itself is really funny and heartfelt, and I love that the author, Dwayne Reed, is also a teacher. I think that makes the story more authentic. And you get to read some of Simon's rhymes and raps throughout the book, which I think makes it even more fun.
Hi, my name is Jamie Tobin. I am the school librarian at Goff Middle School, and I would like to take the time for April, which is National Library Month, to share with you some books that students are enjoying here at Goff. First, I have a wonderful start to a series. It's called Spy School by Stuart Gibbs, and it is about a nerdy little guy who gets accepted to what he thinks is an elite science school, but it is really a front for the CIA. So he becomes a junior CIA agent. The second book I want to talk about is a novel in verse. It's kind of written like poetry, and it's called House Arrest by K.A. Holt. It is about a boy who gets arrested for stealing, and he is arrested and put under house arrest. But you'll find out, if you read the book, that the stealing is actually to help someone else. But you cannot steal for any reason. So he has to go under house arrest for a year, and it details his experiences in therapy and under house arrest. And finally, I have another novel in verse that I really like that I read recently called Mascot by Charles Waters and Tracy Sorrell. And this is another novel in verse that follows a school district. It's ripped from the headlines because this situation has happened here recently where a school district has changed its longtime mascot because it is an indigenous Native American mascot, and it's considered inappropriate to use a race of people in that way. So it's told from the points of view of six different students and all their different views on sports and the Native American mascot that is described in the book. And recently, our New York State Board of Regents passed a law that is prohibiting the use of indigenous mascots. So we have several local districts who have done this. Colony changed its mascot from the Raiders to the Wolfpack, and Corinth changed theirs from the Tomahawks to the Riverhawks. So this is something that's happening right now all around us. And it's a really interesting book that grabs you and makes you think about, you know, what's going on in the world today and how different people are used and kind of exploited. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Caitlin Banks, and I am the Columbia High School librarian here in East Greenbush. I'm so excited to have the opportunity to share reading suggestions with you, and I wanted to start by saying thank you for taking the time to recognize National Library Appreciation Month. We are grateful for the community's continued support of our school libraries. The first book that I want to share with you is Coming of Age in 2020, Teenagers on the Year That Changed Everything, edited by Catherine Shulton. Everyone knows that coming of age in America is supposed to look like. Then came 2020. Instead of proms and championship games and all-night hangouts with friends, there was school on Zoom from bed. In this book, teenagers from across the country show how they coped with a world on fire. As a pandemic raged, political divides hardened, and the Black Lives Matter movement galvanized millions. Via diary entries, comics, photos, poems, paintings, charts, lists, Lego sculptures, songs, recipes, and rants, they tell the story of a year that will define their generation. The pieces in this collection are chosen from more than 5,500 submitted to a contest of the New York Times Learning Network, providing an arresting documentation of how ordinary teenagers experienced extraordinary events. The next book that I'd like to share with you is Celebration of Poetry. April is also Poetry Month, so I wanted to share a novel in verse with you all. A novel in verse, if you don't know, is a whole story that's told using poetry. The book I'd like to share is called Moth. It's a realistic fiction book that's told in poetry, and it's written by Amber McBride. Moth has lost her family in an accident. Though she lives with her aunt, she feels alone and uprooted, until she meets Sani, a boy who is also searching for his roots. If he knows more about where he comes from, maybe he'll be able to understand his ongoing depression. And if Moth can help him feel grounded, then perhaps she too will discover the history she carries in her bones. Moth and Sani take a road trip that has them chasing ghosts and searching for ancestors. The way each moves forward is surprising, powerful, and unforgettable. Here is an exquisite and uplifting novel about identity, first love, and the ways that our memories and our roots steer us through the universe. The last book that I'd like to share is honoring Asian and Pacific Islander Month, which we celebrate in May. The book is titled They Called Us Enemy. It's a graphic novel memoir, which means it's a true story, written by George Takei, who's known for his acting role on Star Trek. The book is written with the support of Justin Ensinger and Stephen Scott, and art is done by Harmony Becker. Long before George Takei braved new frontiers in Star Trek, he woke up as a four-year-old boy to find his own birth country at war with his father's, an entire family forced from their home into an uncertain future. In 1942, at the order of President Franklin D. Roosevelt, every person of Japanese descent on the West Coast was rounded up and shipped to one of the 10 relocation centers, hundreds or thousands of miles away from home, where they would be held for years under armed guard. They Called Us Enemy is Takei's firsthand account of those years behind barbed wire, the joys and terrors of growing up under legalized racism, his mother's hard choices, his father's faith in democracy, and the way those experiences planted the seeds for his astonishing future. If anyone would like to borrow these books or would like more reading suggestions, they can stop by the CHS library or email me at banksKA@egcsd.org.
During each episode of Let's Learn Together, we will have students highlight an activity that they participate in at school. Today we feature the intramural program at Goff Middle School.
Hi, my name is Michael Marcioni. I'm in eighth grade at Goff Middle School. I'm part of intramurals. It's before school every Thursday. I like going to intramurals because it's a way to have extra time playing sports, and you can go with your friends and you just like compete against each other, and it's just fun to like get out your energy before school and spend more time with your friends.
Coming up on the school calendar, our pre-K lottery will be held on Wednesday, April 24th at 6 p.m. in the Janae Elementary School Auditorium. Also, we will have a half day for all students on Friday, April 26th, to provide for teacher and staff professional development. Please mark your calendar. We encourage you to attend a Capital Project community presentation, which is scheduled on Thursday, May 2nd from 6:30 to 7:30 in the Columbia High School Auditorium. This will be an opportunity for our school staff, our families, and all of our residents to learn more about the proposed project that will be on the ballot at the same time the school budget vote and board election will occur on May 21st. This event will provide you with an opportunity to ask specific questions and also learn about the project to improve our facilities and grounds at all seven of our schools. Additionally, in preparation for the forum on May 2nd, you may want to take a look at the information that is available on our website at www.egcsd.org. Please come out and learn about our proposed capital project. That's it for today's episode of Let's Learn Together. Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you listen. Have a great day.